do have a quorum, I call it officially to order. Ms. Parker, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Betsy Parker from the Department of Transportation. We do have a MnDOT overview today, and we have a lot of information to present, and we're going to try to go through it as briskly as we can. I'm just going to give a little introduction about the department and our origins, and then Abby McKenzie is going to talk about our planning process, because that's very important in the how we identify and develop projects. And then Scott Peterson will talk about MnDOT's current financial situation, and Connie Sahebjum, our Metro District Engineer, will talk about four projects that I know that everyone is interested in, including the Wakota Bridge, the Crosstown, the Triangle Project, and the St. Croix River Bridge crossing. So we're going to try to move right along if we can. And I just want to mention one thing to you just in preface. We've already done part of this presentation in the Senate today, and we have a document in the orange packet that looks like this. It is very complicated, and there were a lot of questions about it. And so just let me tell you up front that it says snapshot at the top. This is a document that MnDOT employees use internally to measure and track our progress on certain kinds of activities that we do. This is an internal document. It was not developed for presentation to the legislature or anyone else. It means a lot to MnDOT employees, and we decided that we would not clean it up to bring it over here, that we would simply show you what we use. We have a very large process for measuring and setting targets for certain things, and if you would like to go into it in more detail, Abby's going to talk about a couple selected things from this chart, because it's part of our planning process. But if you would like to go into this in much greater detail, we would be very happy to meet with any of you individually about any of our measures, or to come back and make another longer presentation just on the subject of all the different things that we measure. And these are only some of them. There's nothing on here about all of our modal offices like aeronautics, transit, rail safety programs, because this was a snapshot that we have used recently for other purposes. So we would be happy to come back and go into much greater detail. We had about 30 minutes of questions just on this in the Senate, and I know that won't work here today, so I just want to assure you that we are available for much greater detail about this in the future. And thank you. I just want to start by telling you, for those of you who are new to the committee, that the Department of Transportation was created by the legislature in 1976, and it was they put together some existing other agencies, the State Highway Department, the Department of Aeronautics, the Department of Public Service function that regulated trucking. The department has over 4,700 employees, and there is an organization chart right here. There's a better organization chart in your orange packet, in the pocket on the left, and it looks like this. It's black and white, and it has a phone number for every office director in the department, so that if you have any questions about any of the functions that fall...
I'm singing the page, sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, so that if you have questions about any of the functions that fall under any of these offices, you can feel free to call me or to call these office directors directly and ask your questions, because we're always happy to meet with people. And the department is divided into basically six units, and I'm not going to go through them in detail because we will be doing that when we make our budget overview and our budget presentation. But for now, I'll just mention that we have a finance and administration division that basically addresses human resources and finance. We have a program management division that addresses the offices other than the highway function, like rail, freight movement, and has our Office of Investment Management that manages all of our funds, including our federal funds. We have an engineering services division that comprises all of the very technical engineering activities in the department. an operations, safety, and technology division that addresses all of our technical computer-related and functions, including the statewide public safety radio system, for which we have a responsibility to build and operate that system. We have the state aid division, which passes through to the local units of government all of the funding provided in the Constitution for the counties and the cities, and also federal money for that purpose. And then we have a district operations division that encompasses all of our statewide districts. And in your packet on the left side, there's another sheet on the districts, and it actually has the name and phone number of each district engineer. And you should also feel free to call our district engineers if you have any questions about projects in these districts. Typically, our district engineers will call the offices of the legislators who represent districts that are in their individual districts and set up appointments to come in and talk to you about anything that's on your mind about the district and transportation. And in the metro area managers who coordinate metro transportation projects will contact metro legislators to come in and talk about metro projects. And then there's also a sheet in here for the metro legislators that shows who your area manager is. The metro area is divided into four quadrants, and the names and phone numbers are right here. And you should feel free to call any of these people. They're all happy to come see you or chat with you. Now, state transportation systems. I just want to mention a couple of the goals that the legislature put in state law for the Department of Transportation. The first one was to provide safe transportation for users. And others are that we should develop a multimodal transportation system, that we should encourage tourism, that we should provide reasonable travel time for commuters, provide transit statewide, assure planning consistent with environmental goals, provide an air transportation system, and promote a bike system, promote the use of bicycles. The highway system has 12,000 miles in the state highway system. And there were about 636 million tons of freight shipped by truck on that system in the last year for which we have statistics. We also provide grants for water and rail systems. The department administers grants to ports, of which there are four in the state, Duluth, Savage, Red Wing, and Winona. And we make grants to Short Line and other railroad systems to rehabilitate rail, so that particularly in the rural areas, so that shippers can get freight to market. And you can see here the tonnage that was shipped by rail and water. We also administer a transit program. In the state, transit is divided between the Met Council Transit Operations for Metropolitan Area Transit, and the Department of Transportation receives both state and federal money to make grants to non-metro transit systems. And as you can see, we provide funding to 73 greater Minnesota counties with public transit, and also to some city systems as well, like Rochester, St. Cloud, and Duluth. And then we provide both state and federal money for grants to the aviation system. In Minnesota, there are 136 public airports. The state money comes from taxes on aviation fuel, aircraft registration, and airline flight property taxes. And then we also, through the State Bicycle Committee, assist in the development of a system of state bikeways to encourage bicycling and pedestrian safety. In the last federal transportation funding bill, Congress authorized $9.4 million for a program called Safe Routes to Schools. And that money will be provided, that money is divided up over the 5 years of the federal reauthorization bill. And we've already had one solicitation and round of grants. And we presently have a second solicitation for projects to use the Safe Route to School money. That can be used for infrastructure projects or for education. And that's to promote safety for getting kids to school safely. And then this is just a sheet to show you, if you look at the bottom line here, from 1980 to 2005, that population in Minnesota has grown 26%. The middle line shows that employment has grown 54%, but the actual number of miles traveled on all Minnesota highways has grown 98%. This explains why there is so much congestion in Minnesota. It's because the actual vehicle miles traveled are growing at a rate that far exceeds the number of people in the state. And then the next sheet, page 6 in your handout, this is a sheet to show you a list of all of the different kinds of roads that are part of the state's highway system. There are 132,000 miles of roads in Minnesota. And if you look at the top of this list, state trunk highways are 9% of those total miles, but they have almost 60% of the traffic. And then you can see that the county state aid highway system is about 22% of the mileage and 23% of the traffic. Municipal state aid street system, 2% of the miles and 8% of the traffic. And if you look at the township system, which has almost half the road miles in the state, it only has 2% of the traffic because it's so rural. And then, let's see, I want to point out one other thing in your orange packet, and that is this sheet right here. I'm not going to talk about this sheet today. You can just look at this sheet, and we can talk about this more in detail because I think it's really important for us to get to the planning information, the finance, and the project information. But this sheet has an explanation, a text explanation on one side and a graphic on the other, that explains why our project development process is roughly 10 years. And it's because of all the steps that we go through from the beginning when it's an idea, and we start working with cities and counties and stakeholder groups, people who are interested in getting some road fixed or built, and how we go through all the steps from planning, design, engineering, environmental, getting right-of-way, getting it out for bid, and all of that. And we can cover that another time. But now I'm going to turn it over to Ms. McKenzie to talk about our planning process for how we get ideas all the way to construction.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. McKenzie. Actually, if you'll hold up your questions till both are finished, this is what we're planning to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Abby McKenzie, and I'm Director of the Office of Investment Management. The graphic that you have here depicts MnDOT's planning and programming process that we use to make our transportation investment decisions. The process begins with our strategic plan that establishes our vision, mission, and overarching strategic direction. Next, the statewide transportation plan establishes the policies and performance goals to implement our strategic directions. The district plans and modal plans follow, identify investments needed to achieve our performance goals and priorities within forecasts of currently available revenues. And in each of these planning processes, there are elaborate public involvement processes where we try to do our best to involve the citizens and our partners and stakeholders. As you move from the blue boxes over to the big gray box with the little green boxes in it, projects emerge out of the planning process. In the bottom half, you can see that projects begin the project development process, and Betsy talked just a little bit about that, where we begin to scope out a project and we begin to do the preliminary design. Much of the environmental work on the project begins at that time and so forth. Above, in the top half of that gray box, you can see that a project becomes programmed for construction. And then as we move over to the orange box, once it's programmed for construction, then the project is constructed and the system is operated and maintained. So I'm going to say a little bit more about each of these steps in the planning and programming process. The basic content, and you have in your packet on the right-hand side the 2003 strategic plan. The basic content and format of the 2003 strategic plan was established in 1996 and has remained constant through three administrations, with updates to reflect each administration's unique goals and objectives. If you go to the next page, There we go. Oh, yeah, they don't have pages. They have screens. You can see the three strategic directions established in our strategic plan. These three strategic directions have been constant since 1996. The first is that we safeguard what exists, and this is MnDOT's commitment to preserving the existing system in safe and sound condition. The second strategic direction is make the system operate better, and that's our commitment to making strategic and targeted investments to improve the transportation system. And the final strategic direction is to make MnDOT work better, and this reflects our commitment to continually improving our internal management and processes to be more effective and efficient. The statewide transportation plan established, adopted in 2003, was our first performance-based long-range plan. It established performance measures and targets and used those performance goals to direct investment decision-making. The plan established preservation of the existing system as our top priority, and it focuses on creating best value for citizens and taking innovative approaches to improving our work, such as by meeting lowest life cycle cost preservation standards, making low cost improvements to the system, and improving the efficiency of our delivery systems. The statewide plan established a policy framework to support those three strategic directions that I talked about earlier. There are 10 policies in the statewide plan. I'm not going to go over them in detail with you. Suffice it to say that there are three policies under the Safeguard What Exists, and the first policy is preservation of essential elements of the transportation system. This is our top priority. There are four policies under Make the Network Operate Better. That includes providing cost-effective options for transit and freight, enhancing mobility on our interregional corridors that connect our regional trade centers, making improvements within our regional trade centers, and then making improvements in the safety and the security of the system. These first seven policies are about the transportation system. The last three are really about how MnDOT intends to operate as an organization. There are three policies supporting that strategic direction, and the first one is to continually improve our internal management and program delivery. The second one is to continue to improve in our outreach and communication with our stakeholders, our public, and our partners. And the final one is to protect the environment and respect community values. Under each policy in the statewide plan, we established the outcomes that we expected to achieve through the policy, a set of performance measures and performance targets, and then any guidance that was available for implementation of the policy. This graphic really describes, and you do have in your packet the executive summary of the statewide plan that goes over those policies and the 10 policies, and also the executive summary of the district long-range plans. Once we're through with the statewide plan, then the district plans and the modal plans are developed to identify the investments we need to make to meet those performance goals, and then within the forecast of available revenues, the priorities for investment. And the summary of that district long-range plan is also in your packet on the right-hand side. So in talking about the long-range plan, I talked about it being our first performance-based plan, but MnDOT really is a performance management organization beyond our long-range plans, and this little graphic here is intended to describe that. The performance measures in the statewide plan really establish that highest level of performance measures for the organization. But additional performance measures and targets are established as we move through each step of the decision-making process. So as the district long-range plans were developed and the modal plans were developed, there are additional performance measures to guide those. As we moved into the four-year highway system operating plan, again, additional performance measures to guide those down to our daily performance measures, such as we get a performance report at the end of each snow event, reporting whether we met our snow and ice removal goals for that snow and ice event. Now comes the big, complicated handout that Betsy talked about. But this is a snapshot report. This is an actual report of the agency summarizing a whole bunch of the performance measures we use in each of these areas. And it's a daunting report, but if I could just highlight a couple of ones for you, I think it will give you a feel for what it means to us to be a performance management organization. So this was produced in June of 2006. It's updated annually. Each of the detailed reports in each of these areas, like the State Road Investment Report and so forth, are reviewed in detail quarterly by the district engineers and also by the senior executive staff. To help you with the key, along the top you can see if there is a green circle, it means we have met our performance targets in that area. A yellow diamond means, or triangle, means that we are slightly below target, and the red stop sign means that we are below our target and we need intervention in that area. So if you would look at the very top line, it is our pavement ride quality measure for principal arterials. Our goal is to have 70% or more of our principal arterials in good condition. You can see that status year before, or in 2005, we were in yellow, so we were slightly below that 70% mark. And the current status in 2005 is that we are also slightly below that 70% mark. We're at 66.8% of our principal pull arterials being in good condition. So while we're down from our 2002 levels, we have improved in the percent of principal arterials in good condition from 2004 to 2005, and I just heard the materials office pavement report yesterday, and we're glad to report we've also improved from 2005 to 2006. A couple of others that I'll just point out to you very quickly. Down about a little bit above halfway down that page is congestion, percent of miles of metro urban freeway congested. And our target is that no more than 21.5% of the urban metro urban freeways be congested. And you can see in 2005 we were below that level. But in 2005 we improved to actually reach that level with only 21.4% of miles in the metro area on freeways congested. And our new results in 2006 look like it's going to come down to 20.6%. And this is really the result of improvements we've made in projects like Trunk Highway 100, the Lane Addition 494 completion of that, the completion on McKnight Road. And I have to say, as we were establishing the performance measures in the long-range plan for this area, we actually didn't have a performance measure that we could bring down congestion. We thought actually the best we could do was slow the rate in growth and congestion. So it's really just a remarkable thing and something we're quite proud of, that we've really seen that improvement in our congestion in these last 3 years. The other one that I really want to point out is fatalities on all roads. When we established the performance measure in the long-range plan, we were at 630 fatalities a year, and it was growing. And so we thought we had a really aggressive target when we said that we could get down to 550 fatalities per year by 2020. Well, then our traffic engineer established the comprehensive highway safety plan and thought that we could really, on an aggressive basis, get down to 500 fatalities a year by 2008. And we have just received the report for fatalities in 2006, and they're down to 480 fatalities. This is just a remarkable thing that we're so proud of. We're so grateful to our partners in DPS, the counties. It's really using all the ease, the education, the enforcement, the emergency response. But we had a very nice note from DPS just last week saying that our cable medium barrier program had really made a significant impact on saving lives. And, wow, this is something we're incredibly proud of and grateful to our partners for. So I won't go over any more performance measures. You can see there's a whole set in construction project development, tracking whether our projects are on time and on budget. If you turn the page, you can see the operating and maintenance performance measures. The one the ones that are in yellow are the ones that come out of our market research. So these are our direct customer performance measures. You can see the snow the snow and ice removal, that's our top priority, and we've remained in green in that area. We have buildings measures and electronic communications measures too. And at the bottom of that page, it just summarizes all of the performance measures for each of those big budget and policy areas. So you can see how many are green, how many are yellow, how many are read. So it's a very complicated report, but we wanted to show it to you, warts and all, red stop signs and all, so that you could get a feel for the work we're doing to try to be an effectively managed organization. So I'm going to move on very quickly because I think the next two slides are ones that you actually saw, because I think most of you were at the seminar at the University of Minnesota, and so these come really right out of there. But they're just two really 300,000 slides on our finances. As Norman Foster, our executive budget officer, said, remember, three in, three out. We have three major sources of state revenues. You can see them there. They're distributed according to that formula in our Constitution, 62% to Trunk Highway, 29% to state aid and county state aid, and 9% to municipal state aid. For MnDOT, once it goes into the Trunk Highway, MnDOT's two big sources of funding are those funds from the Trunk Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, $750 million in 2006, and then federal aid agreements. Those funds then get spent in a variety of different ways. We've identified the big areas of expenditure here. DPS, our partners at Public Safety, get $69 million. MnDOT Operations was $450 million. State road construction from our regular funds were $640 million, another $140 million from bond funds for a program of around $800 million. Just a little bit more on federal funding. Again, I think that most of this was covered when you were at the university. Our federal funds come from a reauthorization act that's passed by the Congress usually every 6 years. The last one was passed in 2005, and it was Safety Lou. It includes our formula funds. This is the majority of our federal dollars, but it also includes the earmarks and high priority funds, which represented a little less than 20% of all our federal funds that come to the state have come as earmarks, and that was 160-some% increase over T21. Once that Authorization Act has been passed, then each year Congress annually appropriates the dollars available to each state. Then finally, in Minnesota, and this is unique to Minnesota, the distribution of those federal funds between MnDOT and our local partners occurs through our ATP process. And historically, or in recent years, that's been about 70% to MnDOT and 30% to our local partners. Scott, are you going to go?
Excuse me. Are you through with your presentation, Ms. McKenzie, then? Because I was going to ask for questions when you and Ms. Parker were finished before he starts.
Mr. Chair, I'd be glad to take questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the section you just talked about, the federal aid, and you said what proportion that was earmarked. When we had the budget reconciliation come through after the designation of the allotment of those funds, and they were declined, did they also decline the funding for the earmarks too? Do you understand what I'm talking about? The total federal funds coming in, mm-hmm. and you indicated a portion, a significant portion, by the way, of those were earmarked funds. Mm-hmm. When they cut back the allotment, were the earmarked funds cut back also?
Right.
Or did we just get the pickle on that thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative, right. Through our obligation limitations, they actually, they make the amount of appropriation equal the amount of revenue. So they cut the amount from the amount that was authorized. And both the HPP funds had a lower obligation authority limit set on them, and our regular formula funds. Our regular former funds had a little bit lower limit set on them than the HPP funds, but both had those caps put on.
Right. Thank you.
Ms. McKenzie, when the earmark funds, did the state receive all those that were earmarked? Were you able to match them? Did you get them? Did you get those funds or not?
Well, these earmark funds are both to Trunk Highway projects and to local projects. And the vast majority of HPP projects are actually local projects. But that said, This was a big increase in our amount of HPP funds. And given that long process I talked about, our four-year program had been established, our 10-year work plan had been established, and many of these projects were not at all in that four-year program or that 10-year work plan, or sometimes even in our 20-year plan. As a result, it's very difficult for us to, it's not just the match dollars, because oftentimes these earmark funds come and represent only a very small share of the total project cost. So finding the other money, the match and the other money to fully fund those HPP projects is a time-consuming process, given that we have committed our federal fund in each step through the next 3 years. So it takes us a while to utilize those HPP funds and work them into our program. But we understand the priority that our partners have given to them, the priority our congressional delegation has given to them, and we're working our hardest to bring those projects forward and get those projects funded and delivered. Now, so they haven't been yet, and it will probably take several years to do so, but our intent is to the best of our ability to do so, Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the question that perhaps two questions are good. Two questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. First one being on this particular issue, that if there is an earmark and it receives a reduced appropriation on that, but the cost of the earmark is for the total amount of the project and that does not fund the total amount, does that monies go into the general fund, the reappropriate, or are those funds cut off completely?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the obligation authority for earmark projects is specific to those earmark projects. We can only use that obligation authority for those projects. That obligation authority is typically available until extended, so it doesn't disappear on it. I mean, I think because every state and every transportation professional kind of has this problem, the funds are available until extended to allow the states and our local partners to get the projects designed and organized and get the funding arranged to get them delivered.
Representative Severson, two of those funds are strictly dedicated funds, so they can't be transferred to general fund.
That's correct.
Do you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, one more question. About 3 years ago, I believe it was, we had gone into a project called design-build process, trying to short-circuit the map that we've seen, you know, with the 8 years for the total build. And it was kind of a pilot project, and I was wondering how that project had gone, if you could give us some update on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would prefer, Betsy, do you want to answer? I would prefer Betsy did a lovely job of answering this in the Senate. I would prefer for her to answer that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, we've used the design-build process on several projects now. The Rochester Trunk Highway 52 project, the 494 project that we just completed was also design-build, and I think 212 is also design-build. And we have found it to be a very successful method. It has the potential to save a great deal of time, because the design and the construction can be combined. And it also allows us to take advantage of better ideas that consultants may have or contractors may have with their design consulting partners about how to build something, because we don't specify the whole design. So we think that it's very successful. It's not for every project. You have to pick the projects carefully. It's best for complex projects that where you need to do something differently, like build it a lot faster than you anticipated. So we have found it to be very useful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We're going to get into design build too later, but I just to make a little bit of fairness here, when they say that expedites the project, if you gave MnDOT the same authority to let them design on the same basis, there's no difference in time, basically. I think we got to recognize that. What we're doing is allowing the contractor to design it as he builds. MnDOT, when they let a contract, they let a portion, and they have to let that, and it's built, and then they let another contract. That's why we have that time frame. So I think we have to be careful when we say it expedites a project. It does, but if we would let MnDOT do it on the same basis, I think we'd be equivalent. at least we, I think we should be on a fair level when we discuss. So those are issues we'll talk when we talk about design build. Representative Beard.
I'm over here, Mr. Chairman. I have a question and a comment, just an observation. On page 15 of the handout, Ms. McKenzie or Ms. Parker, either one, Trunk Highway Fund, lower right side, it talks about the billion or so that's flowing through here. Some includes DPS, some includes MnDOT. On the lower right side, it talks about state road construction, $639 million. And bond funded 143. I'd just like you to clarify that. Is the bond funded 143 million? Is that the payments on the bonds that are coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund, or is that the amount of bonded highway construction we're doing in 2006?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it is the amount of bonded work we're doing in 2006.
So we're actually paying $639 million in cash and $143 million in bonds then?
The combined program is that, yes.
Mr. Chair, related to that, there are some payments on, or have we started making bond payments yet on some of the, when we did a big project here a couple of years ago, $400 million or so. Is that coming out of the Highway User Trust Fund also, and about how much is that at the moment?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we are making payments on it. I should have said, as the note said, these are kind of major sources of expenditure. There's a very detailed flowchart that will be covered in quite a bit of detail at the budget hearing on all of our expenditures and all of our revenue sources. Scott, do you want to tell us what the bond payments are now?
Well, if that's coming up, we can wait a few moments, but oh, go ahead while you're here, I guess.
Would you identify yourself, please?
Mr. Chair, my name is Scott Peterson. I'm the Director of the Office of Finance at MnDOT. And in answer to Representative Beard's question, the $143 million are actual payments on construction, ongoing construction contracts funded by bond proceeds. The debt service transfer for outstanding bond issuances for fiscal year 2007 is about $54 million.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Mr. Chair, well, just an observation then on the big complicated chart you hand out, I'm looking at the congestion. Before I make my comment, I guess I do. It would be an explanation. We talk about 21.4% congested or 20.6. Are we talking about percentage of the day on the entire system? We talk about lane miles. There's got to be a time and quantity qualifier on there somehow.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. This is percent of miles that are congested during the peak hours, and we call it congested when the travel speed drops below 45 miles an hour. We actually have a whole set of congestion measures. This is just the one we report on the snapshot.
Thank you. That sets the stage for just a comment. Your work on 494 on the south side of town has been outstanding. I drive that piece every day, and I don't fear to take that piece of highway even at 5 o'clock now, which I think gives me some support, firepower anyhow, to the statement that I used to always contend with, that we can't pave our way out of congestion. Some of us used to say, that's silly, and here's living proof, members, that indeed, with intelligent design and good engineering, we can indeed pave our way out of congestion. At least congestion, I think, is self-inflicted. The whole 494 strip all the way to 394 now has been pretty lucrative for the Highway Patrol because it is so free-flowing that people have difficulty disciplining themselves to stay within 10 miles an hour of the speed limit. And Ms. Parker or Ms. McKenzie, I can think of a half a dozen other small projects like that with $1 million worth of pavement and a little engineering. We could probably reduce some congestion pinch points during rush hour, but you've got pretty bright people on staff over there. I'm sure you've already identified them, but if you want to know, I'd be happy to come over and tell you about them.
Well, thank you, Representative Beard. Just before Representative Hausman, when we look at those two items, you have state road construction, $639 million, and bond funded. Is that included, the $143 and the $639, or is that in addition to Mr. Peterson, is it?
Yeah, the $143 million is in addition to the
in addition to, Representative Hausman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard's question, though, triggered one more question, and that is, when we measure that congestion to decide if we're better or worse, for how long a period would that congestion improvement have to be, a year, 5 years, before we would really say that building project actually solved congestion?
Ms. McKenzie?
How long would we have to say that it's solvent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, you have now exceeded my knowledge of that performance measure. But Tim Hinkle is here. Is it Tim? Aren't you here? Yeah. Do you want to come and talk about those performance measures, Tim?
Ms. McKenzie, may I just interject? I don't know if we're going to get into that subject later. We do have more on the agenda, Representative Houseman.
And then, Mr. Chair, what I would maybe do would just say, I mean, that is, to me, I mean, for us interested in the metro area, that is a question, and so sometime later or in some way, that would be a helpful. And then the other one that they wouldn't probably have the answer to, because we tried to get at it the other day at the university, and that is, if we could finally get a fix on this, how much per year or biennium we actually spend for roads in the state total, which would include property taxes and federal dollars. And the reason for my pursuing that is has to do with expectations of solutions. I was on K-12, and you know, education is this huge thing. And so when you fix one thing, fixing one thing is huge. And so I sometimes worry that as we put fixes on the table that we promise to the public, that unless we understand what's the percentage of that total, that the expectation may be too great on the part of the public of any one solution we put on the table. So it's just one of those numbers that I think we have to ultimately have in order to place solutions in front. So those are future.
Ms. McKenzie, I think, Representative Houseman, I think we can ask Pat Dalton or Karen Corinne, because those figures are available. Those are basically presented to the state auditor's office, and those are available, plus what MnDOT would have. I believe that would be correct. Isn't that right, Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chair, yeah, following our event at the CTS the other day, we actually have started to try and collect those numbers so that they'll be available. I don't have a time when we'll have them available, but we'll get you the best information we can.
I think, actually, Pat, I think you can get them pretty readily. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yes. The county and city numbers are pretty readily available. The towns are a little iffier, but we could probably do something.
Does that answer your question, Representative Houseman? Do we have Representative Earhart?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I picked off the figures on your project here on I-35 and Crosstown as being $285 million, the Devil's Triangle at $161.81 and $50 million, St. Croix Bridge at $275 million. I'm going to add in Highway 100, which are somewhere between 80 and 100 million. I call it 100. Do you have any figures on 494 and 169 interchange that was supposed to be done 2 years ago, I think, now, and was put off into the teens somewhere? And the other one is the 35E and 694 construction. Can you give me a ballpark figure on those two?
Representative Earhart, we will have District Engineer Connie Sahan Shaham. I think he'll be testifying to that. Is that okay if we hold that off?
Okay.
So
let me ask him. It was handed out. I didn't know you were going to get to that.
Yeah. But do you have another question too,
Representative? Yeah. In the chart that you handed out here on page 6, Minnesota Roadways mile share and vehicle miles of travel share in 2005, if you do trunk highway bonding, which of these units that you're showing here benefit from trunk highway bonding? Which of the county state aid, the municipal, the county roads, the township, the city streets, and the other highways, which of those get money from trunk highway bonding?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, the trunk highway system is the only system that would benefit from expenditures from trunk highway bonds.
So any bonding from the trunk highway I find it is only applicable, the postage is only applicable to the state highway, state trunk highways. I have one other question, Mr. Truman. All of this stuff that we have here, Ms. Parker said, is available to the legislature. Just call up whoever's on the list for your area and you can talk to them about it. Now, what is available to the governor? Is any of this stuff available to the governor?
Mr. Peterson, or whoever wants to answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I believe he also has access to all this information.
Does that, Mr. Chairman, does he ever ask for it, or does anyone ever deliver it to him, or do they ever have a conference where he, where someone from MnDOT explains it to him? Do you know him?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I'm not usually present when conversations about transportation policy are taking place with the governor. I do believe that there is a set of information that is presented to him to help inform his decision-making. Exactly what is contained in those conversations, though, I can't honestly say.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to the earmarked projects that were not in the SIP, do you have a dollar amount, how much those are? I know the $52 million for the one north, but is there, do you have a total amount?
Ms. McKenzie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ruth, no, I don't. I could get you that.
Well, I would be interested, thank you, because I'm just curious, because I know you're going to try to do those, even though they're not in the SIP, but then, of course, it does take from other projects that are in the SIP, so that is a problem. So I would like to hear that. Thank you.
Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, and before I ask my question, I want to say that I'm freezing, and if I'm the only one freezing, then I won't ask to change the temperature in the room. But if there are other people who are cold, I wonder if we could have the pages look into adjusting the thermostat to above 30. Thank you. Okay. My question is about the budgeting process, and I apologize a little bit, and if you're going to get into this later, then I can wait. But this is only the beginning of my second term, and I've never been on transportation finance before. But I'm wondering, when you put together the strategic plan, and you're doing that process, which I take it occurs once every 5 years, and so will occur again in 2008, do you put together that strategic plan with an idea of what the budget is going to be for you, what the flow of revenues is? Or you put together that plan with the idea of, in an ideal world, if Minnesota were meeting its needs, this is what we should have, and then you expect that you probably won't get everything that would happen in an ideal world? Or what's the interplay between the budget and the planning?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. McKenzie?
I would say it's just the opposite, is that we use the strategic plan, the priorities, the policies, that and the performance measures and goals that give us direction to develop the plan for how we'll allocate our resources, the resources available.
Thank you.
Representative Kaelin? Kaelin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McKenzie, the city of North Branch, which I know we've talked about before a little bit, is in essence taking their own initiative to try and move the project up a little bit, and in that case the bridge over Interstate 35 and the interregional corridor is structurally sound, but functionally it's, in the words of Congressman Oberstar, is obsolete. I'll say challenged. But they're using the financing mechanism of anticipatory bonding. And in the discussions that I've had with various stakeholders, getting kind of mixed messages about how often anticipatory bonding is being used with the initiative of a community, but then some debt financing is added to the plate in terms of MnDOT share as well, I believe, correct? So can you address that question about anticipatory bonding and its frequency and kind of what additional debt burden it brings forward from MnDOT?
I presume Mr. Peterson, is that yours?
Or maybe it's...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kaelin, I'll take a stab at this. If you're talking about grant anticipation bonds, that is a program... The local government advances?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Okay, local
correct.
Government advances.
Thank you.
I guess that's probably more appropriately than that. That's more programming function.
We have three accounts established by the legislature that allow local units of government to advance MnDOT work and allows them MnDOT to pay them back at the time MnDOT has that project programmed in our program. Two of those accounts, the interregional corridor account and the bottleneck account, allow us to pay interest on that. I believe it's the treasurer's cash rate interest rate. And I can give you the detail on that. I don't believe that there has been any time in which we have fully used those accounts. They have been used, and we're delighted that you're using them. But I don't believe there's been any point at which those accounts have been fully used.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
$10 million in each of the accounts for a total of $30 million.
And the source, the funding source for those accounts, Ms. McKenzie?
Pardon?
The funding source for those accounts, is it the trust fund or?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, it would be our state road construction project.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. McKenzie. Appreciate it.
I think we'd like to cut off the questions unless there's really something pertinent, because we do have some, I think, information that the committee wants to hear. Mr. Peterson has a presentation basically on, I think, kind of the budget or finances as far as the department finances.
Mr.
Were there questions other than that need to be asked?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just one brief piece of information to follow up on Representative Kalin's question. Under that program, we have currently $39 million outstanding that we owe local governments for their advances on construction projects.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I have several slides here that contain information on our primary revenue sources, both state and federal, and the condition of our trunk highway fund. And just to kind of give you a broad picture of the financial condition of the trunk highway fund, again, that's one of six funds that finance MnDOT's operations, although this is by far the largest one. And we pay for basically all construction maintenance activity on the trunk highway system from the trunk highway fund. So I'm going to run through each of the three primary revenue sources for the highway user tax distribution fund first, which is the fund that then supplies revenue to the trunk highway fund, and then get a little bit into the fund balance. So the first slide that you see up there is for the motor fuel tax. And I know the graph is a little bit busy, but we've had some success using this as a communication tool in the past, so I hope you'll indulge me as I try to walk you through this one, and the other slides that follow this one are in a similar format. If you look at the green line, which runs along the top there, that is represents the most optimistic forecast that we've ever made for that revenue source at any point in time. And now we have either 8 or 10 opportunities, depending upon which year of the biennium it is, we have that many opportunities to reforecast or to forecast revenue for the motor fuel tax. And so sometime during that period, there is a forecast made at that level that's represented by the green line. The red line, by contrast, is the most pessimistic forecast ever made for that revenue source at any point during that five-year period. And the black line is what we actually receive. And the reason we use this graph is because it provides a little bit of context for the revenue that is shown there, in that if you go clear to the left on the graph, you'll see that in the year 2000, we took in just a little over $600 million in motor fuel taxes, and that was above our most optimistic forecast that we had ever made. And prior to that, we had a pretty steady growth rate in motor fuel taxes of around 3%, going back quite a ways into history. And you'll see as you move towards the right, that line, that black line, starts to flatten out a little bit as our growth rate dropped as we get closer to present day. And in fact, if you look at the point from 2005 to 2006, our revenue actually decreased. So we took in less in 2006 in motor fuel taxes than we did in 2005. And going back to 1987, that's the first time on a comparable basis that has ever occurred. And unfortunately, one other point on this graph before I move on. If you go clear to the right, you'll see the green and red lines converge, and that's because we've only had one opportunity to forecast 10 and 11 because we just started doing that with the November forecast. The next slide has a motor vehicle registration tax or TAB fees, and it's a little bit harder to interpret because of the change in the fee schedule that was enacted by the 2000 legislature. But again, if you go clear to the left-hand side, you'll see once again, in 2000, the revenue that we actually received was more than our most optimistic forecast in 2000. And then after the TAP restructure was, well, before I move on, the slope of that green line moving from the left to 2004 is basically an extrapolation of the growth rate that we experienced in that particular revenue source up till the year 2000 as well. So you see that revenue source with the old TAP fee structure was growing pretty steadily and pretty significantly year over year. And the black line, again, the actual revenue that we received, it grew the first couple of years with the new TAP fee schedule in place, and you see it leveled off and once again trended downward, where we actually received less in revenue in 2006 than we did in 2005, and came perilously close to our most pessimistic forecast ever for that particular revenue source. And this, for the MBES, again, we started out in 2001, the first year of the most recent effort to transfer MBES revenue to the Trunk Highway Fund or Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And you'll see that, again, in 2002, we exceeded our most optimistic forecast and kind of leveled off from there. And since 2003, it's been trending downward, where we've had several years now where we've received less revenue from MBES than we did the year before. One thing one needs to remember in here, though, is that the 2003 legislature reduced the percentage of MBES that went to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund from 32% to 30%. And so some of that downward slope from 2003 to 2004 is due to that change. But you can see that even beyond 2004, it continued to trend downward. The most recent forecast in November projects that the total motor vehicle sales tax collection for the state will continue to decline until 2008, so we won't bottom out on this curve as a statewide on a statewide basis until 2008. Although because of the passage of the MBES amendment, now we start showing that our revenue from the motor vehicle sales tax will actually start to increase beginning in 2008. And you can see it's on a steady upward trajectory there because of the phase-in period specified in the amendment. This graph shows the combination of all three of those revenue sources. So the total state source revenue from these three sources to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And it kind of shows the same trends that I just outlined that are evident in the three sources individually. Again, if you go clear to the right, you'll see that we are at the end of 2006, we were at basically our most pessimistic forecast. We were in, I think, $3 million out of about $1.3 billion, so basically very close. One of the interesting things for me in this graph is if you look at the revenue estimate for 2011 and go back and compare it to the revenue estimate that we had at one time for 2004, you'll see by 2011, even with the implementation of the new MBES amendment, revenue, we will not reach the revenue that we had anticipated earlier in time for 2004 or 2009. So we're, again, because of all the trends that were in evidence there, we're in a different revenue environment now than we were 6 or 7 years ago, is what all this adds up to.
Mr. Peterson, does that include inflationary effect?
Mr. Chair, this is just straight dollars. So the inflation would come into play in that, you know, the background economy, the overall price levels are going up, so the dollar amount of revenue would go up to the extent that it affects the price of vehicles. Price changes don't really affect the gas tax revenue. That's driven by volume. But the next slide, you see, does incorporate the effect of inflation on the things that we buy with the revenue that we just talked about. And for this slide, you'll see on the left-hand side, we've normalized this basically to year 2000 revenue levels and applied the government price deflator, which is a price index that's maintained by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the U.S. Department of Commerce, to kind of show the erosion of the purchasing power of the revenue stream that we've just talked about. So you'll see that not only are our revenues from these sources declining year over year, but the accumulated effects of inflation just in 6 years has had a fairly corrosive effect on our ability to purchase the materials and labor that we need to conduct our business. In fact, out of $1.3 billion in total revenue, it's had an impact of roughly $300 million, so about 25%, 20 to 25% range. That's kind of our state revenue picture. The picture of federal revenues is a little bit different. This slide shows our federal funds receipts and forecast from the year 2000 as well. And you'll see that from 2005 on, we have experienced and are expecting to get a fairly significant increase in federal funds due to the passage of the safety lieu. The primary reason we're expecting such a large increase is because of the change in the way that gasohol is taxed. And because of the way it had previously been taxed, the contributions that the state of Minnesota made to the Federal Highway Trust Fund were lower, and that affected the formula which brought the funds back to the state. And now that's been corrected, and that's why we did very well. I think we received the second highest increase in federal funds over the T21 levels of any state in the country. One caveat to that is that there's been talk in Washington of a continuing resolution of funding for all federal agency programs at 2006 levels. If that occurs in highway funding, the solid blue line shows where we will expect to be if that occurs for highway funding. So we'll lose out on, we think, approximately $40 million worth of revenue if they continue 2006 level funding into 2007. There's some uncertainty about what impact that will have about federal funding that will come to the state after fiscal year 2007. And some people think that it will form a permanently lower base, and so instead of rising up to the red line as that dotted blue line does, it will go up and level off at $40 million below the red line, for example, as one possible scenario. This bar graph shows how we have used and how we plan to use the federal funds that come to the state. Again, federal funds go to both trunk highway and to local projects. And for those of you who have been around a while, you know that the department has engaged in what we call advanced construction financing, and it's probably not possible to get into a real lengthy discussion about advanced construction financing at this point, but basically it amounts to spending future federal funds today, or committing them to projects today. And in order to take then to get receipt of those federal funds, when we plan to receive them, we do what are called conversions. And in this chart, you'll see the red areas are the conversions that we need to make. And again, those are commitments to existing projects. So those aren't really optional. The only thing that's subject to estimate about those amounts is how quickly construction proceeds, because that drives the payments that we make, and because federal funds are available on a reimbursable basis, then that drives how many conversions we have to do to get those federal funds. So you'll see on this graph that since 2006 in particular, we've had a fairly substantial level of AC conversions built into our construction financing. And 2008 is actually the peak year under our current plans for those conversions, and then we expect it to trend downward to 2009, 10, and 11. And in 2011, that's a little bit outside of our programming timeline, so that number may be more of an estimate than some of the other numbers shown here. And the other thing I'd like to point out here is that 2009 is the last year of the current reauthorization bill, so the revenue for 10 and 11 is really just a flatline extension of what we expect to get in 2009. And this final graph for my presentation is our current estimate for the trunk highway fund balance. And you'll see in the green on the left, for many years we carried a very substantial balance in the trunk highway fund. And we undertook a very conscious effort to spend down that balance so we could put more projects, undertake more projects, and get more improvements underway. And in combination with AC financing, that had some kind of unforeseen effects on our fund balance and reduced it to the levels that you see here. I'd like to point out the fiscal year 2008 negative balance of $65 million. That's largely a consequence of the conversion graph that I just showed you, and that we are planning to use by far the majority of our federal funds for conversions, that is projects that are already underway, leaving us less money to initiate new projects in 2008. Therefore, our program for 2008 is at a lower level than our base budget, which is used in these forecasts. And so, you know, we will be spending an amount in our construction program that will bring that back up to the black side of the line under our current plans. And that's all the information I have, Mr. Chair.
Would you want to give us an executive summary in about one line and tell us what the financial, I think we're aware of it, but what the financial condition is? Not very good.
Mr. Chair, I think it's clear from most of the information that the state source revenues and even the federal revenues are under considerable pressure. We are in an environment, I think, where we're not well acquainted with the trends that we see, so it's hard to predict how these things might continue or may perhaps recover if, for example, the price of gas continues to go down. And we have exhausted, for the most part, at least for the foreseeable future, for example, the next biennium, all of our margin for safety in that regard, which would be our fund balance. So because of the corrosive effect of inflation, I think it's safe to say that, you know, that presents some challenges to the department as we try to continue to perform our operation. But the MVS amendment, again, if you continue to go farther to the right on that fund balance graph, you see that the additional money from the MVS amendment does provide us some relief. By the time 2011 rolls around, I think we're close under our current forecast to about $100 million of additional revenue from the MVS amendment.
At the end of 5 years?
At the end of 4 years, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions from the committee? I don't know what we can ask. Representative department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I mean, you cannot see this last graph without being horrified. And people always say that government should run like more like a business. And when I look at this graph of going from the green to the red, I mean, it's frightening. It's like a store selling down all its inventory, not reordering, not restocking, and saying, you know, oh, sales are really great. We're making a lot of money. Our expenses are low. Things look good, but all the inventory's gone, and you haven't replenished it. And it's just stunning to me that we've gone from this trunk highway fund balance that we had in 2002 to negative numbers without hearing from, you know, the administration a really strong request for funding to replenish that. I feel like as a state, we have a fiduciary responsibility to keep money in the trunk highway fund, and it seems like a big problem what we're seeing on this chart.
I can appreciate it. I guess we don't know how to express it. I'd just like to comment. We have a couple questions, but we have the Metro engineer, and I think there's some projects. As long as he's here, we'd like to catch Representative Beard.
I'll be brief. Mr. Peterson, to follow up on the question that we just asked, looking at the unencumbered the reserve balances and so on, it looks like a pretty dreadful chart. I applaud you for bringing us unvarnished truth, even though I'm trying to understand just what this then means. I know we're the policymakers, but is there a plan forthcoming, or are you going to get something in the next couple of days that tells us what the plan is for turning this around, or is it not as severe as it looks at first blush?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I would say that we have plans, as I mentioned, with our programming levels for 2008 to fix the most serious issue that is depicted on this graph, which is the 2008 negative fund balance. And so that will come back up above the line. The 2009 number, however, will stay the same because for the biennium, our I our spending will be very close to the same. It'll just be there'll be more in the second year and less in the first year. And I think it is our responsibility not only to maintain a fiscally responsible level of balance in the fund to allow us to adapt to unforeseen negative events, which we have seen a number of, and I've just gone through them. It's interesting to go back and look and see how these trends that have negatively affected our revenues started to occur about the same time we got into some AC financing, which preceded the current administration with the Rock 52 project. The big drop from 2002 to 2003 was a big chunk of that was due to some unforeseen effects of the financing plan for the Rock 52 project, frankly. And also that 2003 number included some bond expenditures that at that time we made out of the we accounted for the bond proceeds in out of the Trunk Highway Fund. We didn't separate them out into a separate fund, and now we have done that because, as you can see, when you have a fund balance well over $150 million, those types of impacts don't have a major effect on our plans or our activities. And so we've done a number of things along that line. Our balance that we're forecasting now for the end of 2009, that is, I would characterize that as minimal. But you can see that in the out years, there is an expectation that will grow as more MVEST money becomes available. It's a struggle. You know, we want to deliver services. We want to build projects that benefit people. You mentioned the 494 project provided a significant service improvement. And so that's the struggle, and we think with this fund balance target for the end of the biennium, generally speaking, that's not necessarily a bad situation at this point.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know we've accelerated an enormous amount of projects trying to play some catch-up balls, so it's to be expected that a lot of money is going to be blowing through the account. But the pace that you're on, most of us are very fond of and would like to see it continue, but I'm sure we don't run out of gas, and that's just a rhetorical comment. You don't have to answer that. But Mr. Chairman,
I'd like to point out we are going to adjourn at 5:30, and I think there were some things we're going to have to cut it out. We have the district engineer. I have a couple of questions, and I appreciate all the questions because I think we appreciate Mr. Peterson's candor because we recognize that there's a problem. We didn't know really the extent. I guess it goes all the way. We understand that. But if we could take these questions, we want to catch. We have Representative Severson or Pass, Representative Hobart.
Well, I just want to make the comment that in the days around 99, 2000, 2001, MnDOT was chastised for leaving that money sitting there and not converting it to projects. So people were saying, why are you sitting on $200 million? You could do this project or that project. So, I mean, you can see the trend here. I think there's a way to maybe moderate, but when those green lines were so big, legislators were on their butts, spend that money, turn it into projects, don't just leave it in the bank. So I think a little historical perspective might be in order as well.
You never eat the reserve, I guess. If there aren't any further questions, thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. We appreciate it. And now I'd like to welcome to the committee the Metro District Engineer, Connie Sahanjabhab.
Yes, Connie, sorry.
Coming close, aren't I?
Very good. I don't know, maybe we can make life easier. You can call me by my first name.
Well,
if you want. Sarjan, as you can think of it, as Anderson in Persian language. It's really different.
Thank you. Before you start, I would just like to say we were going to discuss the Bakota Bridge, the Crosstown, the Devil's Triangle, 52, also the design bill in 52, and the other one was
52, the St. Croix River Crosstown.
Yeah, St. Croix River Bridge. We probably will stick to the Bakota Bridge because I think that's all we'll have.
Is that the one you would like to talk about?
I think that's probably one. And on those issues, because I think the committee should recognize there's some problems. We have to be a little cautious how we're addressing it. That may be in the process of litigation at some time, and we have to recognize the department may not be able to answer some of the questions that we would have. But some of the things that we should know I think for the members of the committee, they probably don't understand the nature of the contract, what it is, where it started, are there liquidated damages or supplemental agreements involved, and all of those things. We'd appreciate it if you could comment on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will, with your recommendation, I'll start out with the Wakota River Bridge, and if there is time, I can talk about the rest of them
too. That'd be fine, thank you.
Depending on the number of questions. You do have a little, all I have in the packet for you is a picture of the Wakota Bridge, of the Wakota project as a whole. I don't know where it is in your package, but it's basically a colored, color drawing looks like this. It has the four big projects identified. The total project, which is mostly done now, is about $250 million, and it's all those projects that you see in different colors. And they're all mostly done. The one that we are having a little trouble with is the green one that you see on the over on the right-hand side, which includes the big river crossing bridges. I only have two slides on this project, so it won't be very long. The green portion of the drawing that you see adds up to $120 million of the $250 million. These were all separate contracts that were let at different times.
Yes. Can I just interrupt?
Sure.
Is that on the structure or is that on the approach? Now, is that on the bridge structure itself? And that's actually part of the approach. Is
$120 million?
This part you're talking about.
Yes.
Where the problem is.
It is on the main structure itself.
On the main structure.
Right. As you see in the PowerPoint, the contract, the green contract as we can call it, is $120 million total. The westbound bridge, the one that's already built, added up to, that was about $31 million of that contract. The eastbound bridge that hasn't been built yet, that will be built hopefully in the future, was $24.5 million. Then there was a removal of the existing big truss, which is going on as we speak. They're going to close the lane, I think, next week or during the day to bring the truss down. And the rest of the project, which includes roadway work and some other little smaller bridges, is $62 million. So that's the one contract. It's one contract with the Lunda company that we have that I'm going to talk about. The bids were opened on that contract, that $120 million contract, back in December of 2002. And the work started in March of 2003. Then we had a good news, bad news thing. Bad news was that our inspectors found some cracks in the, if you picture this structure, it's a big box, like this room basically. It has outside walls and inside walls. They found some cracks on the inside walls. And the good news about it was that our inspection program, our certification of our inspectors worked, and they found those. If we walk around, we probably won't be able to see those, but the experts found it. So that's when we discovered it, back in the summer and fall of 2004. So we had to take a step back and think about what we got here. The structure, as the bullet says in the bottom, the structure was designed by HNTB, a consulting firm out of Kansas City that has a local office here. We do not have the expertise and the staff to do it in-house, the structure of that type, so we hired a consultant to design it. And the unfortunate thing that could happen to anybody was that there was an error in the design, and we discussed it with a consultant, and they ended up basically redesigning the whole structure for us. At the time when we discovered this, the westbound bridge was about halfway done. So you can imagine you have this big structure up there, and we're finding cracks, and what do we do now? So the consultant quickly turned around, we redesigned the structure, and we have the retrofit plan. That specific structure was the pieces that were already built, that was retrofitted, and then we had a new design for the pieces that were not had not started yet. And in the meantime, we tell the contractor to slow down or stop work while we figure out what we have. How serious are these cracks? So, and whenever you tell a contractor to stop, that basically means money. The time, the clock starts to run, and every time you do that, that's going to cost. So the structures were redesigned, and we needed to sit down with the contractor and decide what the cost for the additional cost is. And because he's going to want additional money, we slowed him down. It's going to cost him more to build this structure. So I've listed it in this in the bullets, all the dates that we had meetings. We're calling it partnering. It was a negotiation and partnering session. We had an expert to help us. It wasn't a mediation, but help us talk about this because the issues were so complex. Normally, our resident engineers meet with the contractor, and they can come to a solution on these problems by themselves. But this issue was a lot bigger than that. As you see, the agreement was reached on the westbound bridge. Again, that's the one that was halfway built and is now completed. Agreement was reached, and the total cost that was settled was $19 million additional cost for that, just that westbound bridge again. The westbound bridge is now open, as you know, opened in the fall of 2006, and I'm really proud of our staff, our engineers, and our construction folks. We worked very hard to be able to get six lanes on that bridge, three lanes in each direction, and it basically has relieved a congestion somewhat in that area, but by quite a bit. The partnering process and negotiations continued on the eastbound structure. That's the one that hasn't started yet. And we've had the meetings already that you see in the bullets. We were unfortunately unable to reach agreement with the contractor, and the basic reason was the numbers were way higher than our comfort level and what we think the cost was. So we decided to eliminate that bridge out of that contract, that $120 million the green contract. All we did was we eliminated a piece of the work. So everything else they're continuing on working on. They've taken out the old the truss bridge. They're building the rest of the structures, and the only work that we took away from them is the river bridge itself, the eastbound structure. And our goal with that is to repackage that and go right back out to open bids on that piece to let the market decide what the cost of that structure is. So we're working toward that because there's a lot of permits that needs to be renewed right now because some of them expired, railroad permits and things like that, and we have to basically separate from this one contractor, at least separate the bridge and settle that piece of it. Then we can go right back out and I re-advertise. And our goal right now is the fall of 07. I'm not going to be able to commit to that, but that's kind of the goal that we have. It would be a good time to go right back out. And the very last bullet says, basically talks about, okay, I'm sure somebody will have a question that who's going to pay for this. The cost, basically the additional cost, will be partially MnDOT, partially the consultant that designed it. If we would have designed it correctly in the beginning, we would have had to buy more concrete and steel anyway. So that part of it we will cover. The cost of the delays and all of that, whatever the cost may be, that's the part that we feel is the consultant's responsibility. We have not talked to them. We have been keeping them informed of what's going on, but they haven't been part of the negotiations with the contractor. And we're at a point where we're meeting to decide whether we go talk to them now. As I mentioned earlier, there's a $19 million additional cost on the westbound. We know what piece of that is ours, how much of it is theirs. We can we can wait till we relet the eastbound bridge and then do the whole thing together. So we're reviewing all that. We but we will be talking with him soon. It is an unfortunate situation. I was thinking you were talking design-build earlier. I don't know if this would have been a, this was a design-build project, and the designer would be the contractor. So I don't know if it would have been a different story or not, although I know we would have had a big battle still with them. But I know we'll talk design-build later, so design-build later. And you mentioned earlier, Mr. Chair, that the numbers we cannot talk about, and that's the numbers on the eastbound bridge that we haven't settled yet. It wouldn't be fair to the Lunda Construction that we talk about what number they offered and what, you know, where we didn't accept, because there'll be other contractors that will want to bid on the project, so we will not share those numbers.
Just in summary then, what does it appear we're going to be talking about additional costs? The contractor had delays, you'll have to pay for delays and probably moving off the equipment, and there's additional costs for redesign, you're negotiating that with the consultant, and then you also may have some problems in reletting if you relet the contract or else a supplemental agreement, and that cost could be pretty substantial, is that correct?
Exactly, the cost of delays, and to be honest, we had a really, that $24.5 million that you see was a really good deal that we had, the low bid process worked. In that case, we had a really good number, and so now the costs are a lot higher with inflation and so on. The consultant's redesign cost, the consultant, HMTD, who worked for us, they've absorbed that, they redesigned it, and I don't know what that cost was, but they basically redesigned the plans and gave us a new plan, and they don't expect us to pay them for that. And so.
I appreciate the quick summary. We probably have a lot of questions. Mr. Representative Nelson.
I got a few questions, and I guess it's a bit my area of expertise as a carpenter working on construction, but what I'm hearing you say, this was not a design build, so it was the regular process, but I guess my question is, you're saying there was nothing that the contractor, Lunda, did wrong or any of their suppliers did wrong, that it was a misdesign of the bridge by the designer, so that the contractor themselves are not at fault for what happened?
That is true.
Okay, so they're the ones that might be taking the hit if it not, by not getting the additional bridge then, if they don't become a little bitter on the next one.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is the issue, and I think they were in the, we had an article was in the paper, that's what they said, that they have done nothing wrong. But the problem is the cost that we're getting from them is so high that we're not able to digest it, to accept it. I don't think anybody here wouldn't say that, why don't you go out and see what it really costs, because competition, maybe it'll be less. So that's the problem we have. Other contractors could say, well, why don't you send it back out? I could have done it for a lot less for you, you know. I thought you were for the taxpayer. So that's the dilemma we have with the whole thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson.
And Sheila, we've had discussions, Mr. Connie, we've had discussions, Mr. Anderson, we've had discussions in the past about the Devil's Triangle project, which has been pushed back because of problems with our additional costs with Highway 62. What happens to that project with WCUTA if WCUTA gets rebid, and I'm assuming it's what I know of the construction industry, it's probably going to come higher than what you think it's going to come. How's that going to affect other projects like the Devil's Triangle down the road? Are those going to fall off the map totally?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we have in our program set aside an educated guess amount for the WCUTA project, and I did have a presentation on the Devil's Triangle project, and I have said that we are, and I mentioned to you folks before that we are going ahead with the with our design or delivery of that project. It is show, as a matter of fact, yesterday the Transportation Advisory Board voted to go ahead with a stiff amendment, which means to fully fund Crosstown project but temporarily defer the Devil's Triangle project. And that's what our commitment is for that project, to go ahead, and You're hoping in a few days the governor's package will help us with some solutions. I'm sure you guys will work on some solutions, and the sooner that solution will come, the project will go right back out on the street. I have made the commitment as a district engineer to the Transportation Advisory Board. The first dollar that comes to the Metro District, additional dollars, will go to the Devil's Triangle project, to nothing else.
Representative Hortman, and we are adjourning time, basically.
Just a real quick comment. I just wanted to thank MnDOT for being so available. I know the delay of that Devil's Triangle project is not your fault, and you've been wonderful in meeting with us from Brooklyn Park, but people should know that it's a very dangerous intersection. People die there, and we're delaying it because MnDOT's broke, and so we have a responsibility to do something about that. But I just want to compliment you on the way that everyone at MnDOT has been with state legislators in the area and your consummate professionals, and I hope that we can get you the funding that you need to do the work that you need to do.
Thank you so much for the kind words. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know how your schedule would permit, but we would have liked to cover some others. And I don't know, we can check on that and see how we may put you on the agenda, if that would work with you. Certainly appreciate
love,
coming in.
Love, this is the fun stuff to talk about projects.
Great.
The St. Croix, the Crosstown project. But Earhart has some questions about project costs, and I can give it to you when we're done here. So
I know.
I want
this group to know.
Okay.
We do, Ron.
That's part of the thing.
We know.
If they're, we'll cut off the discussion now, and thank you very much, Mrs. Hadjiban. And I really appreciate it. And it was actually not that bad when you come in here.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
No.
But the meeting is adjourned. The next meeting actually is
This is the Kurt Zeller's district.
The 23rd, next Tuesday, the 23rd. I forget what our agenda is. 23rd, 4 o'clock in the same room.
I go up to the base.
Meeting is adjourned.